in March. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Simon. Welcome to Wednesday's programme. It's been a pretty miserable day in the northwest of the UK. Might be nicer where you are. I've got Mark Windows joining me in around about a half an hour's time. You don't want to miss him. It is the 23rd of September.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, I think you know all about Mark Windows. I met Mark back in London in 2013. He's been on this program a few times. He makes an excellent show. He produces it, I should say. Go to windowsontheworld.net if you are unfamiliar with it. He's a really, really good analyst, broadcaster and musician, Mark Windows, a little bit later on this hour. That is Wednesday's programme. And there are some interesting things for you and me to chat about before we get to Mark. I don't mind telling you. Right. I'm still laughing at Margaret Harris from the World Health Organization. Dr. Margaret Harris, if you please. Because you might remember yesterday, Dr. Margaret Harris, if you please, said this when speaking, or when talking even, about why we need more restrictions, more measures to protect us. She blamed us all for having a high old time in the summer, singing and dancing. And she said this.
We have to learn the new dance, the coronavirus dance, to protect ourselves.
I can't get over it. I'm still laughing at it today because I'm a big baby. And last night I took Men Without Hats safety dance clip. Remember that? Remember? Remember? C-C-C-C-O-O. Remember that last night? I've actually written a verse. C-C-C-C-O-O. I've written a verse for this thing. You ready? Because I've got nothing better to do during the day. I've got plenty of better things to do during the day. Got a verse for it. You ready? You can dance if you want to, but you leave your granny behind. But if you don't dance, then if I don't dance, well, we'll have peace of mind. Hey, do you like that?
Don't kill granny.
Don't kill granny. I'll persevere. I'll get another verse to go with the chorus tomorrow. No, I won't. The gag was bad enough yesterday, was it, without repeating it again today? I hear you. I hear you. It's a laugh a minute this week in the UK. Johnson and Hancock, Hancock and Johnson, that is Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, and Matt Hancock, the Health Secretary. Goons, just goons. Hancock said this to Philip Schofield on ITV the other morning, and I missed it, but I'm glad I found it. Hancock.
The really sad thing about this virus is that it thrives on, you know, the things that make life worth living, the socialising, especially when people get close to each other. That's when it tends to pass on.
Amy!
What kind of fuckery are you?
What was that again, Health Secretary?
The really sad thing about this...
Sad thing?
...virus is that it thrives on, you know, the things that make life worth living, the socialising, especially when people get close to each other.
Yeah, it's sad. The virus thrives on things that make life worth living. The virus is especially dangerous when we are having the crack. The virus doesn't like the crack. It must be an artificial intelligence virus. It's watching, waiting for the first sign of fun, and then it pounces. And as long as we are under house arrest, generally miserable, the virus hangs back. Jesus Christ. What a goon. And as for Boris Johnson, well, don't get me started. Now to more serious matters. 7 minutes and 22 seconds past the hour. Check it. Check it if you don't believe me. I've got an atomic clock here. Eh? Radio heads will know what an atomic clock is. The BBC sent a Freedom of Information request to the government. And it's thrown up. I'm just going to be Irish again. It's thrown up some very important revelations. The BBC Freedom of Information request. What did it find? Well, it found that at the very beginning of the pandemic, the government's chief scientific guy, Patrick Vallance, one of Billy's boys, at the time, way back in the beginning, he was speaking about herd immunity. The idea that once enough of us have been exposed to the virus, we would all build up a natural immunity to it. This is true. Vallance was talking about this back in the day. So again, the BBC got this through an FOI request, and they managed to procure every email sent by Vallance and Professor Chris Whitty, the chief medical officer, from February to the beginning of June. And they found that herd immunity was being discussed liberally. Just a good idea. And they found that on Radio 4 back in the day and on Sky News back in the day, Whitty and Vallance were saying, yeah, reduce the peak, not suppress it, reduce it. Most people get a mild illness, so let's build up some degree of herd immunity while also protecting the most vulnerable. It's what should have happened from day one. But they were saying this from day one. Now, the BBC writes today, these words appear like an unequivocal endorsement of herd immunity. They were. The government, chief scientific advisors, back in the day were talking about herd immunity. So what happened? What happened? What happened indeed? Who knows what happened? I don't know. Something happened to change their minds. No idea. But we know that a number of scientists and doctors, a great many in fact, have been insisting that herd immunity, naturally acquired herd immunity, is the way to go. Okay, get over it. Get it, get over it, have the antibodies. Eventually, the infection goes away. So now, the BBC presenter Emma Barnett wanted to get into this with Peter Openshaw. Now, he's a scientist specialising in immunology and viral infections. He's at Imperial College London, one of Billy's universities. Yes. And this takes the blue ribbon for fuckery this week. Emma Barnett wants to know, who's right then? Those saying let natural herd immunity develop by opening society, or people like Openshaw who say, let's wait for one of Billy's jabs? Have a listen.
I think there is a pretty wide consensus in the scientific community about how this virus is actually transmitted. There are people who put alternative points of view, and that's a healthy way for us to conduct ourselves as scientists.
But who's right?
But I think you have to...
Good question, Emma. Who's right?
...to look at the consensus. It's like the debate about vaccines, where you put up somebody who is a vaccine, an anti-vaccine person, against the very large majority of people who know that vaccines are well-tested, safe and effective.
Well-tested, safe and effective vaccines? Really? What kind of fuckery is this? Certainly not well-tested. No proof they're safe, and they're hardly effective. Just look at the flu jab history of the last few years. Is he really comparing scientists who are arguing about herd immunity with so-called anti-vaxxers? It sounds like he is.
And then it looks as if it's an equal balance between one side and the other. I think the vast majority of us are very much in favour of reducing these events where transmission will occur, because we see things from the health point of view, and we can see that these are events which are going to lead to widespread transmission of this coronavirus.
I understand the analogy you're trying to draw there is, in if you put two people up like that, it makes it look balanced. But actually, that is one of those examples where you can say, and we're allowed to, it's a rare example on the BBC where we're allowed to just, you know, say that the person who's saying the anti-vax message is wrong. You know, we're allowed to say that because of the science. Do you see what I'm saying? Whereas here, I'm asking you, who's right? And I wonder, is it right what you're saying about this when we've got other scientists saying we don't need to go into lockdown? So where does the majority lie? Are you saying it's on your side?
Right. We'll get to the answer, whether he's on the majority side by saying don't allow people get the virus. But you did catch that from Barnett, didn't you?
It's a rare example on the BBC where we're allowed to just, you know, say that the person who's saying the anti-vax message is wrong. You know, we're allowed to say that because of the science. Do you see what I'm saying?
We, as presenters, are allowed to say that anti-vax people are wrong because of the science. It's a rare example. It isn't rare, but anyway. So to his question then, are you in the majority when it comes to herd immunity?
I think it is a minority view that we should allow this virus to just rip through society. And
rip through society. They're using these terms, aren't they? These very emotive, at the very least emotive, these very descriptive terms. Rip through society. The virus isn't ripping through anything. It's something that people get. Some will, some won't. Most will be okay. Some will be a bit sick. And a very tiny, tiny minority will end up going to hospital. It isn't ripping through anything. Anyway, are you in the majority?
Create so-called herd immunity. I think that that is not the way that the majority of scientists would side in this debate.
Are you saying those scientists who do, forgive me if I get the analogy, if I've inferred it from it wrong, but are you saying they're going to look like those who are anti-vaxxers?
Good question.
I would liken it to that situation. I think it is...
I would liken it to that situation. He is claiming on BBC Radio 5 Live this morning that men and women from academic institutions just as illustrious as the one he is speaking from, men and women who say, allow the virus to run through those that it won't harm very much, which is the vast majority of people, and develop natural herd immunity as we have done since Moses was in short trousers. He's comparing them to anti-vaxxers. He really is. He just acknowledged it.
It's wrong to say that we should let this virus just go.
She should be ripping him to pieces now.
And infect a large number of people in certain sections of society.
I would be reconstructing his anus now if I was Emma Barnett.
Society in order to create immunity. I think there is every prospect that there will be at least one vaccine.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, let's not let the virus develop in society and we all get natural herd immunity. Let's not do that. Let's all wait indoors for the vaccine, he is saying. You see?
There is every prospect that there will be at least one vaccine and probably more, which are found to be safe and effective around Christmas time. And that there's every prospect of several of those vaccines being fairly widely available, certainly in affluent communities, over the next 6 months. Mm. And that's a much better way to generate immunity than letting the virus just go wild.
So let me get you straight, Professor Openshaw of Imperial College London, endowments by Billy Poison Jabs Gates. You're saying don't let the virus run its course as we have done since Jesus was on roller skates skating around Bethlehem. Let's not do that. Let's stay indoors until we have one of several vaccines. Ah, that's what you're saying.
Surprise, yeah. Surprise. The unexpected kiss you between the eyes. The unpredictable.
That's the surprise you see. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah, let's just let's hang around indoors because this virus doesn't like the crack. Let's wait in. Hang in there until the vaccine arrives with the cavalry, says this person. I'm not going to swear today. Ah! Barnett does. Shall we hear more of it, shall we? Let's hear a little bit more of it.
It's quite a big thing that you've just said there. I wonder if we got, I don't know.
She's good now. She picks them up on the anti-vaxxer thing.
One of the professors or scientists who signed the letter in the favour of what I'm talking about, letting it... not doing lockdown. I wonder what they'd say being compared to an anti-vaxxer.
Very gentle, wasn't she there?
I think, you know, it would be a healthy debate to have, but
the point is we don't debate that. Can I just to let you in on a journalistic point here? Mm-hmm. We actually...
A journalistic point, as if Emma Barnett would know anything about journalism.
We don't, as a matter of editorial policy, we don't debate with anti-vaxxers whether they're right or wrong. We actually don't do that. So are you saying that, as the BBC, as journalists, that we shouldn't actually be debating this because it's not debatable?
Wonderful revelation there from the BBC. Very honest, Emma Barnett. I love honesty in BBC presenters. It's a rare thing. It's as rare as hen's teeth. As rare as hen's teeth. Go on, Emma. That was beautiful.
We actually don't, as a matter of editorial policy, we don't debate with anti-vaxxers whether they're right or wrong.
Whether they're right or wrong. We don't have anybody on criticising vaccines, even if they're right. That's the BBC policy. You know, Billy's vaccines in India, they did all the damage. The swine flu vaccine that gave people narcolepsy, and the Gardasil vaccine, HPV, that is laying waste to young women all over the world. We don't have those people on. Whether they're right or wrong, she said. Good girl.
We actually don't do that.
We don't do that.
As a matter of editorial policy, we don't debate with anti-vaxxers whether they're right or wrong. We actually don't do that.
Well done. So she said, should we refuse to debate the herd immunity scientists? Should we?
I think I would say that it is an extreme view.
It isn't an extreme view. I'm not going to swear.
To say that we should just let this virus go and that we should get back to normal social activity.
Ah, that's an extreme view now in 2020, is that you just deal with a respiratory infection. We've had millions of them over the years and we've left them go. We've looked after granny and granddad as best as we could. We know some people will die because they're not well anyway. And the rest of us get on with their lives. But now that's an extreme point of view, says Peter Openshaw. Mad stuff. No having the crack until the vaccine arrives on the back of a horse. Stella Creasy, Labour MP. You know Stella Creasy, don't you?
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
That's her. Fishwife of the year for 5 years in a row. Amazing woman. She's campaigning to have misogyny categorised as a hate crime. Meaning, if you commit any crime against a woman and she says it's because you hated her, you'll get a harsher sentence. Here's Ian Collins. You'll hear Creasy first. It's Ian Collins' programme, Talk Radio. Stella Creasy is comedy gold. Here she is.
Well, do you get abused for being a man, Ian? Do you get abuse about how you look? Do you have people following down the street late at night trying to grope your breasts? I've had that happen to me.
What?
Do you have people following down the street late at night trying to grope your breasts? I've had that happen to me.
What's hateful about that? About somebody running down the street after you trying to get a hold of your boobies? It's wrong and it's punishable by existing law. And rightly bloody so, if you don't mind me saying so. Perverts, flashers, upskirters. I've never understood flashers, have you? Those lads that jump out from behind a lamppost or a bush and rip open the coat, show the lad, and then run off down the street. I've never understood them at all. Dirty little perverts. But there are laws. Hate? I wouldn't imagine the chap running after Stella down the road trying to grab a hold of her boobies, her knockers, hated her. But that's just me, I'm not sure. Anyway, this continues.
Have you seen the statistics about rape and violent assault of women in this country? Have you seen how domestic violence and street harassment has soared during lockdown? This is about the evidence of the violence and harm that women face and being able to recognise that in our sentencing process and getting the police to record it so they can better track and prevent those crimes. Now, when we do that, we can help keep more people safe. I'm very pleased for you, Ian, that you probably don't experience the same level of misogynistic abuse that I do. You might experience some, but surely it's not okay to target somebody simply for something that is an innate part of their identity.
They don't target you. They don't hate you because you're a woman. It's a pervert love. We have perverts in society, they're dipsticks, and there are laws to punish them, aren't there? Lots and lots of existing laws, and you get pretty strict sentences from magistrates if you run after a woman, because it's a terrible thing to do. But what's this nonsense, making it a hate crime, calling it misogyny, and then they get an extra sentence because the judge will believe you? Oh, he grabbed my boobies because of his motivation of his hatred towards women. Oh, is that right? Extra 12 months for you, Sonny Jim. What does Ian Collins say?
It's absolutely
don't
not,
accept
yeah.
it for racist abuse. Why should we accept it for misogynistic abuse?
I hate Stella Creasy. There you are.
I agree. It's absolutely not acceptable. And if I had a pound for
I don't know her. I don't hate anybody.
For every female friend that has told me similar stories to the one that you've just told me.
What? If I had a pound for every female colleague who told me a story similar to you, is there an epidemic in the UK of men running after women in the middle of the night trying to grab their boobies? Why aren't we hearing about this in the news? Why isn't it on the radio? There are 572,600,045 cameras in this effing country. We are surveilled to be Jesus. I'm not sure this is true, that women are running away from men with their arms outstretched and their fingers moving, trying to grab a hold of the boobies. Anyway.
You know, I get all of that, but of course there will be, nonetheless, still a component of, and it's, this is not, I'm not trying to hammer home a men versus women thing here, but I'm just intrigued as to what would happen if it was smaller in amounts, but if it was a man that was on the receiving end of a crime that was based on his maleness.
Oh, well, and the Law Commission has said they're happy to take evidence on that. What we've done is work for the last 2 years with a wide range of organisations.
Ah, shut up, Creasy. Jesus wept. Shut up, love. That's misogyny right there. How could you listen to that drivel, you know? Oh, the Law Commissioner said, yes, if a man is the victim of a crime and if he thinks it was anti-male hatred, this identity politics, you know, we're subdividing and subdividing and subdividing, aren't we? Flashers. Jean Ann is telling me about a flasher. There was a kid flasher called Fred. Flasher Fred, he was known. The whole outfit. He had the wellies, the raincoat, and he'd flash, and we'd roar laughing and run away. Back then, the parents said of Flasher Fred, he's just a bit touched. He'll do you no harm. Which was rather sensible, looking back, says Jean Ann Crowley. Yeah, Flasher Fred. I've never been flashed, sadly, and I don't know anybody who has been flashed, but I do remember many, many years ago going to the Waterford courthouse on a Friday, sitting in my early days at WLRFM, and hearing the various cases coming up on the day, hilarious cases. And there was a flasher called before the judge. It was hilarious. And the judge gave a stern lecture to him. Oh, God love him is right. God love him. I wanted to play you this yesterday. Ben Bradley is a Conservative MP, and he was on talk radio with Mike Graham yesterday morning. Ben, the Conservative MP, is disgusted that massive sums of money are being spent on unconscious bias courses for members of Parliament. A lot of money.
A lot of money as well. I think we're into about $750,000 for the first course that we've all been told to do over the summer, and another potentially $750,000 on the way.
Right. And what is the course called and what's it supposed to do?
So this one that they're planning now is called Unconscious Bias Training. It's exactly as you just said, that we're all closet racists. We just don't know it. And we need to be re-educated about the language that we use, make sure we don't ever offend anybody, which obviously leads to really good scrutiny in Parliament, as you can imagine, if you're trying desperately not to offend.
Right. Well, I mean, Keir Starmer's just got up and given Boris Johnson a bit of a coating at a press conference. I presume that would be termed offensive, would it?
Well, if he's being mean, Mike, then obviously we shouldn't be being mean, should we? he has committed to doing the training, though, hasn't he, Sir Keir?
Well, he's called, called Boris Johnson, he's called him incompetent, so I think that's quite mean, isn't it?
That's a bit of a judgment, really, that he shouldn't be making, should he, without, considering all of the reasons why Boris might have, conditions that might make him particularly offended or emotional about that. You know, maybe he needs to think that through a little bit more.
I mean, there will be people listening to this probably knowing more about it than I do, because they may have been approached by the company they work for to be told you're going to be having to do the same thing because you're obviously in need of some unconscious bias training.
Well, it's been rolled out across the board. It's mad, to be honest, how this, in my view, overtly leftist kind of programming has been rolled out across the public sector. Lots of people in private sector organizations now, very keen to be seen to be doing things like this, the politically correct kind of appealing to the Twitter sphere. And it's been rolled out across the board. I'm very lucky that I can say no, but I'm conscious that lots of people in workplaces around the country aren't going to have the luxury of doing that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Many people around the country not having the luxury to say, no, I will not participate in a unconscious bias training course. Tis mad, eh? I'm going to finish. We've had a few giggles this afternoon, you and me. I'm going to finish on a serious note. I get people telling me all the time, bread and circuses, they say. I don't understand, Richie, how you could watch football. Bread and circuses, that's bollocks. The establishment, the elite, may have wanted sport and organised sport to keep the masses, to keep them quiet and to distract their attention. They might have wanted that. But some amazing social movements came from the terraces over the years. And there's a lot of other things that happen around football clubs that you don't know anything about if you don't love your football, as I do. I want to just let you listen to Steve Thompson. He's the managing director of Dagenham and Redgrave Football Club in London. It's a famous old club. It's in the National League. And he worries that Dagenham and Redbridge, he is very worried the club's going to go under. And not only that club, but many National League clubs, many League Two clubs, many League One clubs. And the impact that is going to have on the communities where those football clubs are based, well, it's unthinkable. The Dagenham and Redbridge managing director, Steve Thompson, in conversation with Nicky Campbell, very briefly, you'll hear Campbell's question. Listen carefully to what the managing director of the football club says.
What was it like when you heard the news yesterday?
It was horrible. It was really, really horrible.
The news is they might not have fans until March next year.
We're a small club. We rely on a small band of people, a lot of volunteers, and we've been preparing the ground for the last 2 months, ready to start playing in front of spectators from the 3rd of October. Last night we had a pilot event, and we had just over 600 people here, and everything worked well. Public health, local public health were here. They were very impressed with what we'd done and what we'd set up. So not to be able to do that on the 3rd of October puts in jeopardy, in my opinion, the 67 National League clubs across the country.
What about playing behind closed doors? How feasible is that?
There isn't the money at our level. We're not a Premiership side. We're not a Football League side. We haven't got the big TV deals that they have got. So we haven't got anything to fall back on. And what also you've got to remember is that most non-league football clubs are central parts of their communities. And we're not just there on the 30 or 40 home matches every year.
Are you listening now? It isn't just about the football games that we play when we are at home. It is about much more. Listen.
Every year. But we're open here in Dagenham and Redbridge. We're open 365 days a year.
Yeah.
We're part of the community. We have pensioners groups, a deaf society, a bereavement society.
Yeah.
And all of these people are using the club every day of the week. We also have weddings and other functions that go on, which help earn our income.
I get that. If you're in a room with the Prime Minister, just finally.
Nicky Campbell cuts them off. I get that. If you're in a room with the Prime Minister, what would you say to him, he says? It's dreadful stuff, isn't it, by the BBC? You know why Campbell cut him off? Why? Because they were coming up to news or to a break? No, because he wanted to talk about Bake Off with his co-presenter, Rachel Burden, a ridiculous reality TV programme. What the man said, and it's the same at Salford City, it's the same at Waterford United in Ireland, at Shamrock Rovers, at Cork City, at Galway United, at Finn Harps, at Stockport County, across the city. These institutions play a vital role in the communities they reside. The devastation brought about by this lockdown and now the announcement that they won't be able to allow fans back in until next March, well, it's going to destroy and close and put out of business and put into administration many of these vital hubs in the communities that we live in. Ah, Mark Windows is joining me in a few minutes' time. Bruce Springsteen is 71 today. I love Bruce. I don't care that you don't like that I love Bruce. I won't wax lyrical about him. Here he is with Hungry Heart. Welcome to Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Now, there isn't another radio show like it anywhere within a 5 mile radius of here. Mark Windows next. Alrighty then, let's leave Bruce there for now. Bruce Springsteen and Hungry Heart on the Richie Allen Radio Show. A rather dull and grim Salford evening it is here. My guest today is a pal of mine. Met him in London, as you know, I mentioned earlier on, back in 2013. Nobody in recent years has better been able to explain to me, particularly many agendas, but particularly this climate change agenda and how it is a smokescreen for changing humanity at every level, changing the way we live, the way we think, what we are, and the future, how it's been rolled out and by whom. He's outstanding, really. You can find him at windowsontheworld.net. He's a musician, a broadcaster, a researcher, great analyst, and a good pal. Let's welcome back to the programme, Mark Windows. Welcome back, my friend. Good to have you back. It's been a long time. How are you?
Very well, Richie. Great to be on with you.
Thanks, my friend. I'll ask you first and foremost, how have you been through the last 6 months? How has it been for you personally? I know you've worked pretty solid non-stop, challenging it and trying to understand it and explain it to people. But has it impacted on you yourself? How have you coped with it? Because it's been a strange time, hasn't it?
Very strange times, Richie. And I did not think that this acceleration of the Global Action Plan would be brought about by something like COVID-19. There was this kind of push towards 2020, the ID 2020, etc. But they actually caught me a little bit by surprise, the speed and enormity of what's been going on. I've actually coped really well with it because very shortly after lockdown, I was asked to do a show 5 days a week on an American radio station called RBN. And I did that, and that kept me going all through the summer. I was very lucky to be in a place by the sea so I could get into nature. There's a lot of people who are not that fortunate. And because I knew this was going to happen, Richie, I was kind of prepared. So in other words, I'm thinking, well, OK, this is what I've been researching, and now it's game on. It's not like that for a lot of people, though, and it's extremely confusing. And I get calls from people who are really at their end of their tether. And the information that we're bringing to them, I think, is helping for those people who are actually awake to what's going on.
Really good answer that. Yeah, you were definitely somebody who knew that this was where they, the royal they, wanted to take us. That's an absolute fact. Pretty honest about not expecting it in the way it's happened this year. I certainly didn't. I never saw this coming this year. And nice that you were able to do that during the summer. Congratulations on that. And being near the sea, helpful as well. Where would you like to start with this, Mark? I mean, you're on, we've got as much time as we want this afternoon. We've got loads and loads of time. We don't have to rush anything. I mean, PCR testing for cases. A lot of my listeners are tweeting about that today. That seems to be an area that some of the listeners feel that this could be attacked if more than Julia Hartley Brewer in the mainstream media had the courage to take it on. Do you want to talk a little bit about how they're getting away with it, how they're managing to convince the public that there is a really serious, deadly virus and we need to be protected from it?
Yeah, well, it really goes back into this system of global governance, Richie, because the way things are controlled is extremely important. And most of what people are actually fighting against the system with are built into the system. Now, that may sound really confusing to some people, but the point of the matter really is that most people are not actually really relating to the real issue here. The real issue is a global action plan. It has nothing to do with the virus. The virus is the cover for it. However, I've been researching it for the past 6 to 7 months, and I've looked at it from all angles. It doesn't take too much for this thing to fall apart. Yes, the PCR testing is where people can actually get some remedy. I really think that, because obviously that is a good line of attack. But to me, understanding what this is really about, which is the fourth industrial revolution and the Great Reset, these are the things which are being missed out of the conversation. Yeah. In other words, it's not about, I don't want to wear a mask, I don't want to be locked down. Let's deal with those things as well, Richie, because it's really important to me, this. Now, the mask issue, people have been protesting against that. There's no need to protest against the mask wearing, because it is not actually mandatory, because you can exempt yourself. As far as lockdowns go, it's going to be very difficult for this country to be locked down in a real sense. So I think that people may be getting distracted onto things which are a kind of effect, but they're not the cause of what's going on.
Good
because point. We're facing something that's never happened before.
That's a great point. I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of getting bogged down by what appear to be huge things, but are not really. It just requires a little bit of courage when you go out, when it comes to masks. You're absolutely right to say that. Mark Windows is our guest. Would you? I always do this to you. I always put you on the spot, but you're always up to the challenge. If I asked you to explain in the simplest possible terms for new listeners to this programme what you mean by the fourth industrial revolution and what you mean by the great reset, if you had to synopsise those. Now, of course, you're going to get plenty of time to flesh these things out today. But if you had to give a quick opening paragraph on those two terms, which are, of course, huge and they're not being discussed, really, how would you describe those to people?
Well, the thing is, you have to look at the historic kind of activity of what's gone on before it. When we talk about things like technocracy and artificial intelligence and these systems have been worked on for a very long time. The fourth industrial revolution is really something that was actually described by Extinction Rebellion, funnily enough, because they said that this is quite a good one, actually, because this is actually from the aims of Extinction Rebellion. Now, I want to make a point here. The globalists need the anti-globalists to implement their policies. In other words, all forms of manufactured protest are factored in. These are called grassroots movements or citizens' movements. But listen to this. One of the aims of Extinction Rebellion was to build structure, community, and test prototypes in preparation for the coming structural collapse of the regimes of Western democracies. Now, that is extremely important, because in the documents that came out of things like Our Common Future in 1987 and the Rio Conference of 1992, it was clearly decided by world leaders that Western democracies would be brought down. They would be deindustrialized. The fourth industrial revolution is a technocratic revolution, which I think you've covered on many of your shows. Now, to put this together into a bigger picture, you have to look at what global governance actually is. And in order to do that, you have to realize that national governments do not matter with unstructured global governance. Now, people say there's no such thing as unstructured governance. Well, it's unstructured in the eyes of the public. It's unstructured in the eyes of the public.
Mark has dropped out there by the sounds of it. 18 and a half minutes to 6 o'clock. It's the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Manchester, well, in Greater Manchester. Mark Windows is on the programme, windowsontheworld.net. He's still there. Maybe his mic was disconnected. I'm going to disconnect from him and call him back. He's a terrific analyst, Mark, on this issue and others, but on this global reset, on this fourth industrial revolution. We lost you momentarily, my friend.
Are you still there?
Yeah, we're still there. We lost you. I just disconnected. We did lose you for about 10 seconds. Go ahead, mate.
I just wanted to bring this up, actually. It's from Our Common Future, which is 1987. It'll give people an idea of how long this has been going on for and how long it's been planned. You see, the thing about COVID-19 is it's a driver of the new system. That's what it's there for. It's an acceleration of the plans of Agenda 2030 and Agenda...
It's happened again. It's happened again. We might have to take a tune while we get Mark back on the programme. He's still there, but he's dropping out. I wonder, is there an issue?
Okay.
You just dropped out again. Yeah, you dropped out for a second. I wonder, is there a microphone issue there? Because the call didn't drop out, but your voice did just for a second. I don't know if you want to check that connection there.
Okay, Richie. Yeah, I'm keeping away from the microphone now, so it should be okay.
Ah, brilliant. I've done it myself a million times, my friend. Anyway, carry on where you left off. Go ahead.
It said that we are aware that such a reorientation, now we're talking about what is basically the fourth industrial revolution, we are aware that such a reorientation on a continuing basis is simply beyond the reach of present decision-making structures and institutional arrangements. Right now, this is very, very important, because in Our Common Future, it carries on with this quote. I'm just going to try and find it. Hang on, I've lost it here.
No, so take your time.
Basically, yeah, I'll take my time, Richie. Yeah, I think that by dropping out, I've actually
no worries.
Something.
So what they're basically saying in English then, in plain English,
yes.
is
yes.
the things we want to happen, we can't bring them about in the current system of governance, basically. That's what they're saying, right?
That's absolutely what they're saying. And basically, they're saying that it needs to be enforced through what's called the common interest or right. the common good. Now, in order to understand what they mean by this, it's very, very important to be able to see it in a sort of historical perspective, because when we talk about what's happening now, we cannot refer to that without looking at these documents and what these people are saying every year in places like Davos. It's extremely important because the whole point of this is that the global governance system, as I said, to most people is actually unstructured and they can't see it. But you have to do a little bit of research and then you will start to see it, because the actual the implementations of this are across everything. And that is I've just found the actual quote here, Richie.
Cool.
Everything just went off there.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah.
Yeah. How are individuals in the real world to be persuaded or made to act in the common interest?
Yeah.
The answer lies partly in education, institutional development, and law enforcement. Most important, effective participation in decision-making processes by local communities can help them articulate and effectively enforce the common interest. Now, we're talking about enforcement here. So basically, what the whole thing is about is getting the public to accept being absolutely controlled and managed with every aspect of their life in real time through what is actually a virtual reality system.
This is genius, Mark. It's genius because at the same time, the public will believe that the public is making the decisions. That it's part of it.
That's absolutely right. And the whole idea of the communitarian system is it appears that the public are making these decisions. So
yeah.
when we look at these protest groups, such as Extinction Rebellion or Black Lives Matter, they are drivers of global governance.
Yeah.
And all they're doing is appealing to emotion. Gail Bradbrook herself said people react to emotion and belief and not fact. And this is a huge problem, because basically people are being steered through this pandemic into a psychological warfare program of absolute simplicity. And the whole point of this system is it has to operate on the fact that everyone appears to agree to it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
this is something that they reiterate at all of their conferences.
Manufactured consensus. When there isn't consensus. And you educated, I remember the first time you came on after this particular show began, and you talked to me in great detail, and it was very interesting as well. You do it so well, how they managed to convince everybody that we all agreed that the planet was going to explode because of CO2. And yet, if you stop and think about it, and if many people stopped and thought about it, you know, kind of disconnected from their Twitter group of choice or their Facebook group or their researcher of choice, most people wouldn't agree. But yet there's a feeling, it's almost like a given that we all agree that climate change is real and it has to be addressed. But that's not true. But they managed to convince everybody that it is true. And to the point where people would even be scared now in 2020 for fear of the consequences for denying that it's true. I mean, you went into great detail about this in many shows, and I mean, you've talked around the country about this. It's very simple, but also kind of sophisticated at the same time, isn't it?
It's sophisticated because it's on a massive global scale. And yeah. we have to remember that globalists think big and the public thinks small. Now, that's not denigrating the public. We're all taught to think small. We don't think big. We don't think global. So what the globalists want us to do is act local. And they say, think global, act local. Even Lady Gaga was saying it when she was locked down singing from a bedroom or whatever yeah. she was doing at that UN event. Now, the point about this, the way It works. I need to keep reiterating it. And that was what we were doing through those talks, Richie, because for the last 3 years, I've been talking about exactly what is happening now, but without COVID-19 as the cover story. So in other words, the whole of the acceleration of this agenda is what I've been talking about for a long time. And because the climate change issue was being questioned more and more, they needed a rapid driver for global governance. And that's exactly what happened with COVID-19.
Let me ask you a quick question before you expand on the COVID-19 acceleration of it. So when I was on the radio at WLRFM many years ago when I started out in Waterford, and we were doing our mid-morning talk show, Mark, and we were talking about decentralisation. Now, at the time, I knew less than I knew now. I know nothing now, I'm the first to admit that, but I knew less back then. I thought this was a great thing, decentralisation. You know, power devolved to Waterford City Council and Cork City Council. But now I see, and it's through the work of you and others, but you mainly, I now see what they were doing there with decentralisation.
Yeah, Richie, it's a really good point, because on the surface, if you don't scratch the surface with this, it looks like a good idea.
Yeah, it looks great.
And it looks like you are some kind of nationalist if you go against it. So they frame it very, very simply. And the intelligence services then frame it as you're a white supremacist,
yeah,
you're extreme right wing. According to Hope Not Hate, if you listen to my shows, you might start questioning the moon landings, but then you will be radicalized into the extreme far right. Now, I don't know quite how that's going to happen, and they don't, yeah, explain it. But this is the simplicity of the argument that they give. So in other words, you have a totalitarian system which masquerades as community.
Yeah.
That's where it differs from old-fashioned communism, because you don't have a visible state, a visible Stasi. What you have is a kind of idea that there's a global community. Of course, there's nothing of the sort.
Mark Windows is our guest, and we've got Mark as long as he wants to be with us, even up to 7 o'clock. I'll put my teeth back in. Hey, listen, I wouldn't worry too much about Hope Not Hate. That shower of liars made out that me, I've got 6% name recognition in the UK, that 6% of people in this country have heard of me. I can't get recognised, Mark, on my own street, man. It's nonsense.
Think the thing is, Richard, nonsense. We're talking about the ineptitude of,
yeah,
the lower end of the British intelligence, yeah, services. And at the high end, they're not that intelligent, because they're framing everything so simply. The reason they're framing things so simply is because of this new global governance concept, because they can't operate outside it. So in other words, we're full of hate. We're right-wing extremists. Now, I don't quite know how that happens.
Yeah.
But because, say, for someone like me, they can't really frame me. I have people on that they don't like. Therefore, I give a platform to hate, because,
yeah,
the people,
yeah,
that I have on, they might not like. But the problem they have is they can't define me either. And that is incredibly important. So what they will say is that, well, if you listen to him, you could end up getting radicalized into,
yeah,
the extreme far right. And of course, they never explain how that's going to happen, because it can't happen, because we don't do left and right. Global governance is above left and right. So therefore, we're actually describing the system that they are in.
And this is why
very confusing to them.
It is, and it's why we're going to see within the next 12 months a real movement against independent content creators. You're absolutely right to say that. It's a shocking thing. Don't play. They basically are saying, don't play the ball, play the man. So don't go after him for his own shortcomings. I mean, you don't have many as a content creator. Go after him because of those he's interviewed. That's an extraordinary thing. That we saw that last year with people saying, you know, I better give your show a wide berth, or I better give this person's show a wide berth. Why am I not? You know, is there something wrong with me? No, it's that person you had on. I can't be tainted by association. And that particular thing, Mark, just briefly, that's all part of this. They've actually thought of this. There's a plan for this as well, for broadcasters like us and others.
Absolutely. Well, you featured in one of those Hope Not Hate manuals that they put out.
Yeah.
And I think you were in it before I was, actually. I was quite surprised. You got in there first.
Yeah, I got in there, yeah. Unbelievable. With that nonsense lie about 6%. I mean, it's just an absolute lie, that. I mean, I'd love it to be true. I'd love to have a big huge head in me here, you know, that of everybody surveyed, 6% said, yeah, I know that baldy gammon. I mean, it's just nonsense. Liars. But what can you do? I mean, we live in a post-truth, post-fact world anyway. You just have to laugh at them, don't you? But go on, you were going to say it's important, this.
Yeah, well, I think it's about strategy, Richie, really, because in other words, when you get these groups attacking you, they bring more people in. And just to finish off that, after Hope Not Hate kind of mentioned Windows on the World, and it was actually quite a good review in a way.
Was it?
Because it was actually all right, apart from the fact that they said that people were going to be radicalized by listening to me into the far right by maybe not believing the moon landing. Do you know what I mean? Apart from that, it was all right, because it actually brought a loads of new listeners in, and people came to me through Hope Not Hate, which is fantastic. So, in other words, there's a huge ineptitude, and I think it goes through this whole system of global governance, because what we have is a corporate infrastructure takeover. And that corporate infrastructure takeover is based on greed. And this is a very important point. General Konstantin Petrov brought this up. He said the results of the Rio summit of 92 were that nothing actually happened. People got on board with this sustainable development idea, which is basically a depopulation program, ultimately. But he said by 2002, the heads of international banks and multinational corporations made an ultimatum. We will solve all problems of rich and poor countries if you submit to us undivided possession of all infrastructure that ensures the livelihood of people. And that explains exactly what COVID-19 is about. It's an accelerator of this system where, in other words, new things are being tried out underneath this so-called pandemic. Systems are being tried out. Psychological warfare techniques are being tried out through the public participation. They're testing to see how far they can push the public and how much they will comply. For instance, mask wearing. What better? You're testing out your facial recognition cameras and you've got your normal CCTV cameras in city centres. How many people are wearing a mask? Let's see how many people are complying with our nonsense. Oh, we're about 70% in Birmingham, 80% here. Oh, London's down to 60%. That's what it's for. You see, you have to start thinking of the strategy behind this. And that's what I'm constantly trying to get over. In other words, people focus on the wrong issues.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I hear you. I'm going to agree with you. I was going to get stuck into you there about that, but I'm not going to, because you mentioned it earlier on. You're right. Yes, of course, the mask, you know, people shouldn't comply, but they don't have to. It isn't mandated.
Well, Rich, it wasn't even about whether they comply
or not. No, you're
or
right.
Not.
You're right. I hear what you're saying.
What I'm saying is that if you think of it another way, what is the mask actually for? There isn't a pandemic. Most people know there isn't a pandemic. Yeah. By definition, the World Health Organization had to change the goalposts on what a pandemic was, because a pandemic is meant to actually infect 12% of the population before it can become a pandemic. But they took that off just before Gates gave them the billions, right? Or the millions that he gave them, because he gives them billions. But I think in this case, it was about 50 million. And then they started to announce this. Now, the point is that what I'm saying is that you have to look what's behind things. Now, I don't wear a mask. I've never worn a mask and no one's asked me to. And the point is that if we're talking about compliance, well, that's a different thing altogether, because people have to make their own minds up here. Now, I've been out a few times to different places, and the mask wearing thing is not as prevalent as a lot of people think. In London, it's very prevalent. Once you get out of London, not so prevalent at all. So, in other words, they're testing all this stuff. They're testing the rollout of this Great Reset, this artificial intelligence infrastructure that's being put in, the new global health security system. That's what it's really about. Biometric ID. They want to track and trace everybody, and they want to have everyone on universal credit. This is the big plan. This is the global action plan. But my point is that I don't think that the systems that they're putting in are ready. And I keep up with this, Richie. I look at biometricupdate.com. And there's a lot of different competing organizations with the biometric ID, for instance.
Yeah.
They'll say we're surfing the wave of COVID-19. I mean, to them, it's a big business. It's a massive business. So there's a fight amongst the corporations to roll this out. And I don't think it's effective. I talked to a lady in America called Vicky Davis, who used to work on IBM computer systems, IBM computer systems, rather. And she says that from her point of view, and we've discussed this on many shows, I go into the strategy and she goes into the infrastructure, that these systems that they're trying out, they're not ready. COVID-19 has been accelerated too quickly. They are not ready to put this system into place, which is why the government are to-ing and fro-ing and making all this stuff up. They're being told what to do. Obviously, they're hostages of global governance.
Yeah.
But what's actually happening is this stuff's being filtered down because they need to keep the public in future shock. In other words, they have to keep traumatizing the public. Otherwise, they might wake up out of the thing and go, well, we're not having it anymore. So they have to keep confusing them with this stuff. It's a psychological warfare program, really.
So the hardware and the software might not be ready. This might have something to do with let's keep people in kind of limbo until next March, which would make it pretty much 12 months since it all began. Or is the announcement yesterday, which will take us probably to next March, is that more about the vaccine itself? Because by then, apparently, Peter Openshaw telling Radio 5 Live today, they might have several vaccines ready to go then. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely, because you've got different corporations working on it. Therefore, I think that, yeah, what you're saying is absolutely true. They keep putting forward things. They keep putting things into the future because they're not quite ready. Same with countries and their travel restrictions. There's a lot of confusion about what's actually going on. I've been talking to people who work in the travel industry, and there is no uniformity about what's going on. In other words, what this depends on is public participation. Without the participation of the public, this cannot work.
And how do you think I look at the acquiescence, as I've called it, and it leaves me a bit despondent from time to time. But other friends of mine and other content creators that you know and I know, they tell me that I shouldn't be so despondent, that there is an obvious, almost palpable murmuring of discontent in wider society, that people are getting fed up of it to the point where they are looking at alternative news programmes for the first time in their lives, and they might be about to, you know, at that place where they might be about to say, no, I'm not having it anymore. How do you see the public at the moment?
Well, that's a really good point, because in London, I see a lot more compliance than out of London. But what I do see are people who are quietly getting on with their lives and not engaging with it at all. And I've seen that quite a lot. And I think that we're going to see more of that, because as the sticking plaster becomes more unstuck, which it is doing, what you're saying is absolutely true. People are questioning it. They were questioning it from the start, because anybody who looks at this objectively can see that it doesn't make any sense. If it doesn't make any sense, then there's something wrong with the cover story. So I think that's a very good point. However, the whole thing is dependent on this public participation. And I think that the only way to actually tell whether this is going to work or not is if they go into an absolute martial law situation, which Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum, who's one of the authors of all this, in effect, he's actually the author of the Great Reset and the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Well, they're saying that, I'm paraphrasing here, they need to get full participation, otherwise there is going to be a violent eruption. They're actually saying that, so they're ready for that. Now, that brings in something I think that's very interesting as to what their strategy is really going to be. Because when they say lockdown, there has never been a lockdown yet. The lockdown is in the minds of the public. There isn't a lockdown.
Explain that now. I think I know where you're going with this. Explain. The public thinks we were told we couldn't go to work. We were told we had to stay at home. outside of exercise and outside of travelling to the supermarket, that felt very much like a lockdown. Why was that not lockdown, and what would lockdown look like?
Okay, so if you're going to close the country off, you need to close the transport routes. They haven't done that, and they can't do that. They also can't stop you from going shopping. So they don't know where you've gone or where you've been and who's they. We had a very half-hearted attempt at the beginning of this of some army who were out on the streets up north somewhere. And that all disappeared. The problem they've got, they haven't got the infrastructure to lock down the country. They can't go into a full lockdown. And I'll tell you why. This is my opinion. Because it's not well planned enough. They haven't put enough thought into what they're doing.
Yeah.
If you're going to lock down a country, you have to get really organised, Richie, don't you? You have to get really organised. You have to have the military going to be bringing in supplies. You're going to have towns locked down. You've got to have the military looking after the infrastructure. And they haven't got that. So what have they got? They've got a sign up saying there's a lockdown.
Yeah.
Or they've got the news channels telling you there's a lockdown. There's never been a lockdown. I've driven all over the country, Richie. I know I'm irresponsible. I know I'm full of hate. I know I'm an extremist, but I've actually driven everywhere.
You didn't get the message about not killing granny, did you, Mark? Listen, that's positive, right? So,
yes.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I pretty much went where I wanted to go. I couldn't go for a beer, but I mean, look, so what? I could get a bottle of wine in my local supermarket. But yeah, you're right. My movements were pretty much unencumbered, uninhibited. I get what you're saying. So they would, of course, need a massive deployment of the army, maybe possibly the
territorial.
Well done,
territorial.
Thanks for helping me out.
Yeah. Also, the police have one, Richie, called the Territorial Support Group, who are basically, in effect, a private army. They assist the police. So there's quite a lot of those, but there's not that many.
Is that right? So could that be the explanation for Boris Johnson, seemingly a throwaway comment? It's been ridiculed by his own backbenchers today, but his throwaway comment that to enable the police to better enforce things over the next 6 months, we might ask the army to safeguard critical infrastructure and Downing Street. So that's been laughed at today, but maybe there's more to that.
Well, I think what he's talking about is a visible presence. So if you have the army outside Downing Street, then that gets on the news and people are going to go, wow, there's soldiers everywhere. No, there's soldiers at Downing Street. There's been soldiers at Downing Street before. There's always undercover people there amongst the crowds. Nothing's changed. They just make it more visible. That's all.
But
they can't do that in every town, city and village in the country without the participation The public have to become the police. Funnily enough, in the 9 principles of policing, it actually said that the police are the public and the public are the police. And in the communitarian system, what they're trying to do is turn the public into Stasi snitches.
Yeah.
In other words, for the common good and in the public interest, we're going to snitch on our neighbours because they've had 7 people around
Imagine.
Tonight. That's what they need to do. If the public don't go along with that, there is little they can do without strict enforcement. And we haven't seen strict enforcement.
Yeah, that's
yet,
a good point. That's a good point. Peter McCann is a big follower of yours, loves you. He says, Richie on Twitter, love Mark, fantastic. The best you've ever had on, he says. I don't agree with that. I interviewed Brian May years ago with his big head of hair on him about badgers. I'm taking Brian May over Windows. Windows is a close second. Mark, Windows is a close second. Windows on the world.net. Mark, he says, great to have Mark on, but re-lockdowns, look at the Philippines. People were shot dead. And Peru. And he could have...
I'm talking about the UK.
Of course you are. I knew you were. I knew you were. And you're right in what you said about the UK.
I've got a friend in the Philippines.
Go on.
He's got a flat there. And he told me a while ago he's not going back into their local city. He's not going there. He's moved out of the cities. We are seeing a strict lockdown in certain countries. This is not uniform, though. That is what's interesting about it, Richie, in that there's huge gaps in what's going on.
Oh, yeah, It wasn't a gotcha moment for you.
No,
because I knew you were talking about the UK.
I understand that.
But Australia, Victoria, I mean, mother of God, you know, dragging people screaming into cars because they haven't had masks on. You are bang on the money. We haven't seen that in the UK. We have seen it in other parts of the world. I suppose the $64,000 question is, should we expect that in the UK in the near future. If the public, I saw a tweet yesterday with some of these COVID marshals, people wearing yellow T-shirts with COVID, it was actually phrased very nicely, COVID advisors, I think it said on the T-shirt. I mean, do you think the public will grasp this? Yeah, let's start snitching. Or will we be aghast at the idea? And what about those people being dragged out of the, you know, out of their apartments in the Philippines and in Australia? Should we be concerned about that coming in here?
Of course we should be concerned, because the global action plan is really part of what was called the British, this group of social engineers. So it really originated from here. And what we're actually seeing in other countries is basically different levels of what they want to enforce. So, yeah, what's been going on in Australia and New Zealand has been terrible.
Yeah.
But it's restricted to certain areas, and that's what they're doing. So the whole idea of this is that the UK will become this smart city network, and then they can lock it down properly. At the moment, they can't do that, in my view, because there's too many problems with the infrastructure. I don't want to reiterate this, but I think it's really important because the planning just hasn't gone on. You need to plan a lot in advance for this. And this has been sprung on our government. And you can tell when you look at Boris Johnson, he's a hostage.
Yeah.
He is being paraded as a hostage. He's unsure of himself. He's lost that bluster. He's trying to look confident and he looks worried. He's very wise to look worried because these people are now being instructed. Now, this is a thing that I think is a very difficult to get over to the public, that we don't have a government. We have governance. They're two different things. And yes, that could happen here. I think that possibly they will be looking for an excuse to do these lockdowns. That's why we have to be extremely careful about the way that we interact. And my view is that people need to start strategizing, because I don't think that what's going on is very clever. But yeah.
What do you mean by that? I'm going to dig down there.
Yes.
We have to be careful about the way we interact. What do you mean by that?
What I mean is that in order for this to go full tilt, they need a revolutionary movement. Now, the revolutionary principle has always been used to enforce totalitarianism. So in other words, what you do is you manufacture dissent. And people have a tendency to get drawn into manufactured dissent, which is a real mistake. So my view is this. I think what we're going to see are events that are staged to get the public to react. And that will then be televised and will say, well, look at what's going on in the country. We want to protect the people who are law-abiding and who are not reckless and are not full of hate and are not spreaders of the virus.
Since forever, forever, those in the shadows, let's call them that for the moment, they have used the old agent provocateurs to make people, genuine people who come together to exercise their right to assemble and say, we disagree. It's been a tactic of governments, and I shouldn't say governments, but of intelligence agencies since forever. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about? Because I was saying to people on this programme a couple of weeks back, I was saying to people, listen, it's marvellous to go to Glasgow, to go to Sheffield, to go to London. It's a great thing because you meet a lot of people that feel like you and you get a great boost from it psychologically. Continue to do it. But there needs to be something more happen after that. You need to do something else. And one or two people didn't like it. They were saying, oh, Richie, you're poo-pooing the protest. I said, I'm not at all poo-pooing the protest. Far from it. But I see the way those protests are used. You have some doctors and some scientists, and many of them who speak at these things are good people and they've got good things to say. But yet the reporting on these things is always about something else. It's always about a crazy person or fighting or something like that. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
Yes, but let's take it to a more grassroots level, if you like. With the system that's already in place, you talked about COVID marshals.
Yeah.
Now, within local councils, there are agents of change. And this is something I've been reporting on a long time. People do not realize how insidious this government system has become. It's talked about on a certain level, but once you start looking at the interaction of NGOs, interested parties, and these agents of change who are mentored into the principles of basically what's going on through COVID-19, which is sustainable development. COVID-19 is an accelerator of what's called sustainable development. And because this infrastructure has been in place a long time and people do not see it, that is a huge problem, because they will believe that engagement with, say, their local council will actually achieve something. And we now have a whole structure that's been put into place of trained agents of the state. Now, I'm not underestimating this here, because it doesn't matter whether you're talking about the media. Say, look at the Live Group, Live PLC, which is the Express and the Mirror Group.
Yeah.
Well, that's a communitarian press outlet. And basically what that's for is to demonize anybody who is deemed to be outside this system. So my view is that people have to be strategically clever with what they're doing, because the actual way that these systems are working and what they're trying to do is get a kind of homeland security system going like they've got in America. It's like a federalized system. Now, that is what they want to put in place. And to some extent, that's already in place. I've been covering this. We have data mapping and all this 5G stuff. It's been going on a long time, and it's tied into organizations which the public think are benign. And that
give us an example now of one of those organizations that might appear to be benign or even benevolent, but which isn't. Give us an example of one or two.
Well, you can take anything, really. I mean, you could look at Crime Stoppers, which was partnered with ESRI, which is a data mapping company, which I exposed years ago. But the point is that I'm talking about NGOs here. So you can list any number of them, because it doesn't matter what corporation that you talk about or what company, then they are linked to surveillance. This is my point, that this infrastructure, Richie, is already in. I think that's the short point, is that the infrastructure's not finished, but it is in. And the infrastructure's in there enough to be able to map what's going on locally everywhere.
That's mind-blowing. What you just said there is mind-blowing for many people listening to this program.
I've been studying it for years.
I know you have. Yeah. And you know, when I first heard things like that from you, I've never been somebody who doesn't want to hear something. I'm very open-minded. But I thought to myself, this is dreadful, really. There's nothing sacred. There's nothing decent. There's nothing, you know, as I said, benevolent. Crime Stoppers is a great example, and I've read what you've done on that and other organisations. Basically, massive data collection organisations sold to the public as wonderful things, communitarian things, of course, but they're not, you know, and that's a hard thing. I've asked you this before. You must be aware, because you're not stupid, far from it. For the vast majority of people on planet Earth, they can't even begin to think about stuff like this. Life is so difficult. The mortgage, the kids, you know, dealing with mental health problems, which are real. I know we're being sold a big red herring about mental health. I know we are, because they want everybody to be medicated. But people are down. They are lethargic. They are fed up. They're all over the place. And yet you're trying to ask them to consider these things. It's tough, Mark. It's a tough sell. Even though I'm on board with you, it's tough to get people to consider this stuff, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. And that's why I keep trying to hone it down and simplify it. Now, the point you brought up there about name one of these organisations, well, you can name hundreds of them.
Any of them.
There's organisations like Crown Agents. They train future leaders all over the world. And a lot of these organisations, I'm not saying them particularly, but the ones that I've studied and put out in the past on my shows, they are absolutely intrinsically linked to surveillance systems. Now, the reason I know this is because even when we were at the People's Voice, Richie, I found out that somebody who'd befriended me was working with private security to undermine what I was doing.
Yeah.
I caught them at it, and I found out exactly who it was. But my point, the major point here is that there is a whole infrastructure of surveillance that people don't know about in this country. Now, take it one step further. They want to take us into smart cities. Smart cities, say there's one in Saudi Arabia called NEOM, okay? There's another one in Kazakhstan called Astana. Now, these places they're completely cashless. Cash is not allowed. Everything has to be done online. Everything is monitored in real time. Every financial transaction, everything you do. So these are the experiment for the global governance system. Now, the thing about a smart city is this: they have their own corporate jurisdiction. Now, people will not understand that.
I don't understand it. You've got to explain that to me.
What it means effectively is that you don't have a national government anymore. You have a structured governance system which is for that particular space, which is run by corporations.
Yeah.
Now, that is mind-blowing when you think about it, because people see these court buildings and the Royal Courts of Justice and go, well, that's where justice is done. Well, that's people's perception from the past of how this worked. It doesn't work like that anymore. And that is my point, in that you're talking about a spider's web of organizations which all come under the banner of sustainable development, all working for the common good. And it really is part of this fourth industrial revolution. The Great Reset is really about this new technocratic system which monitors everything in real time. Now, that doesn't mean that that's going to be 100% effective. And my view is that you can usurp a lot of this stuff, because if you form unusual alliances or you don't act the way artificial intelligence thinks you're going to act, then they've got a problem, which is why I say unpredictability is the key, because I don't think that this structured governance is going to work for everyone. So the way I see it is that certain people will operate in a different way underneath this system. That's the way I see things actually breaking through.
That's the chaos theory aspect of it, the unpredictable nature of people. Mark Windles is our guest, 21 minutes past six. It's Wednesday, the 23rd of September 2020. Windowsontheworld.net is where you'll find Mark. He's on Twitter as well. If you look for Mark Windows, there's only one Mark Windows. We're talking about the fourth industrial revolution, the global reset, and what it means, this new technocratic civilization, this future, smart cities, the Internet of Things, everybody connected, the hive mind. These are not buzzwords. These are things that Mark has been researching for many, many years. I've got a few questions to ask you, coming in from listeners. There's one about the furlough scheme. We'll get back to that, because you did mention earlier on that everybody being hooked up to some sort of universal credit is part of the plan. We'll come back to that. But this technocratic future, again, I'll do my MSM thing and say to you, for the vast majority of people, the notion that vaccines are being rolled out, multiple vaccines, and that they are new vaccines which will change our DNA, they will basically make us hybrid humans. That's something Vernon Coleman has said. I've seen him say it on his excellent series of videos, and he's also said it to me. How do you get somebody to even consider that, number one? I know you might say, well, Richie, it's my job to just put it out there. It's up to wider society to take it or leave it. And you might have every right to say that. But how the hell can we or anybody else get people to consider that? And is this technocratic civilization, this future world, which isn't that far away if they get their way, is it planned to be a world with far less of us in it? And where's the proof of that? Because I have a lot of mainstream listeners. I really do. They love a bit of free speech. So they love this. They would never deny you the right to say what you want to say, Mark. But ultimately, many of them go away saying, ah, Richie Allen is full of shite, really. And, you know, it's all very entertaining, but how could they possibly do this? And where is the depopulation angle, Richie? Show me the proof. What does somebody like you say to that?
Well, the point is, I think I made this point earlier on.
You did.
That these people think big. The public thinks small and are trained to think small. Social engineers from the beginning of this century have been talking about depopulation. Now, there are numerous documents which go into this, and pretty much every conference that the UN have, the Global Governance Summit for 2019, for instance, basically any globalist conference will refer to this. The problem the public have is they don't understand the language. Now, you see, I've been speaking to you in a bit of communitarian. I've been giving you some of these word salads that these people speak.
Yeah.
Now, to actually understand a lot of this stuff, you have to scratch the surface a bit. You do have to do that. There's no doubt about it.
You have to do the digging yourself, effectively.
A little bit, but most people go to a cash point machine or something like that and listen to the conversation, or in a shop. I've heard loads of people saying there's too many people on the planet.
Have you?
Yes.
Go on.
And it's in the most middle class areas. The people who are the most entitled seem to want to have less people in the world. And this is a very important thing, because social engineering is tailored to the mentality of the people it's aimed at.
Yeah,
and when you start to look at this stuff, you have to start thinking like these people are thinking. They're thinking big. They're thinking on a very big scale. And the public do think small. I mean, listen to this. This is one organization who are training people who are going to be, say, in your local council, in the police, or in public office. Our consultancy work helps nations achieve deep-rooted change in the institutions and systems that are vital for the nation's prosperity and well-being. We work with governments, NGOs, public and private sector organizations to develop successful leaders and effective organizations through training and professional development programs. Now, the training for sustainable development is heavily about population control and immunization for all. No one will be left behind. When you start looking into what sustainable development is, you will see that it's a control and management system of everything on the planet. COVID-19 is a control and management system. So if there's a control and management system, and the globalists are saying that there are too many people on the planet, well, why would they not be wanting to cull population?
Yeah.
And they've been talking about it a long time. Now, we could do a show on it. I could bring up all the quotes. But the point is, when you are looking at this stuff as an overview to get the bigger picture, you have to give people a bit of an insight just into what it's about so they can look into it themselves. But I've studied this whole vaccination area, and the whole thing about vaccination was a lie in the first place, because the diseases that it was meant to have controlled, and the people it's meant to have saved, well, those things like smallpox and measles and all this, they were already declining. They declined with the vaccination alongside it. I've been talking to a fella recently called Jim McComiskey, and he wrote a book about the biomedical paradigm.
Yeah.
It's called The Ultimate Conspiracy. He has a letter from the National Virus Research Laboratory stating that they do not isolate or identify viruses. So when you, this isn't a good example, because then you will give that to somebody in a public office and they will say, yes, but it's been viewed on an electron microscope. And then you go, what's been viewed on an electron microscope? And they say COVID-19. I say, but it hasn't been isolated. So you go into these circular conversations. And this is the problem with a lot of this stuff, in that the whole idea of a control and management system is that it's a control and management of everything on the planet. And everything has a certain amount of energy and a certain lifespan. And that is what technocracy is all about. And that's what smart cities are all about. We're talking about an energy harvesting system. So, yes, you've asked quite a few questions there, and yeah. I've given a few anecdotes. Yeah.
You have Mark Windows as our guest. It's 28 minutes past 6 o'clock. Mark will stay with me until the close of the show, I think. He can leave any time he likes. He isn't a prisoner of the Richie Allen radio show. You are listening to me, Richie Allen, live from Salford here in the Northwest with the Richie Allen radio show, Monday to Thursday, 5 o'clock, and Sunday morning is at 11. Windowsontheworld.net for Mark's programme. It's on YouTube as well. Check it out. And you can follow him on Twitter. This is really important stuff. Now, to the question from Susan about the furlough scheme. This is really interesting because you mentioned this earlier on at the top or at the outset today. You mentioned the Susan's question is, can you ask Mark what he thinks of the furlough scheme, please, Richie? 9 million people still on it. And you said the desired outcome is for all of us to be basically depending on our income from the state, or all of us on universal credit. Is that right?
Absolutely. And the whole of this COVID thing is about controlling the narrative of public opinion and conversation. So you get people talking about the virus rather than the outcome. Because the point about this is that it's to destroy sovereignty and self-employment. Now, that to me is the worst aspect, because I have remained sort of fairly free. I do what I want when I want. I get a bit of money from what I do, not a lot. I've always been self-employed. I've never been dependent on the state like yourself.
Yeah.
Now, you see, the thing is, Richie, our individual autonomy is at stake here. And once you have to acquiesce to this system, it wants to monitor you from cradle to grave, but it also wants to legitimize what they do to you. Now, all of this stuff goes into things that are pretty horrific, which I don't want to get into, because we need to keep it, I think, on a sort of positive level.
Yeah.
Because there are different levels of what's going on.
But I know what you're saying here. I know what you're saying. I know where you don't want to go, and I agree with you. But ultimately, if everybody is dependent on their livelihood from the state, then it becomes possible to compel people to do things or have things done to them, or they could be, well, switched off for a little while. Is that it?
That's exactly it. And my point also is this, that there is artificial dissent built into the system, but real dissent is not built into the system. Therefore, it's very easy, when you are a commodity that can be easily tracked and traced through surveillance systems, that you can be dealt with accordingly. Now, what I would say is that I do have experience of this, even in the present and the recent past. And I know what organizations and people with these change agents in are capable of. So once you devolve that amount of yourself to this system, you are in real trouble. And yes, it is going to be DNA altering, this vaccine. I've read all this stuff, the biometric stuff. I've read all about it. The implementation of that is what I think they're a little bit nervous about. They're just testing compliance at the moment for it. But yes, you will not be able to travel unless you're vaccinated and all this stuff. Now, I do like traveling. This is one thing that really concerns me, because if you feel like you're a prisoner, you're going to start acting like a prisoner. And people like us are going to get triggered, and we're going to go, I'm not a prisoner. And that's what the system wants. It wants those people who are not compliant to fight against it. It's all built in. Therefore, the way around this can only be achieved through strategic thinking. Say, like World Economic Forum, their website is called Strategic Intelligence.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Hey, listen, when you say that it wants to generate some opposition, is that because it wants everybody else to basically rein in that opposition? I mean, if you said it wants people to rise up against it, a certain amount of people or a certain class of person, is that to provoke everybody else to go after them? Because, well, you're ruining it for the rest of us, or you're putting the rest of us in danger. Is that it?
That's one angle. The communitarian angle is, why are you being so selfish? Why are you so full of hate? Why are you a right-wing extremist, etc.? The other side of it is this. The revolutionary spirit is built into the system. The revolutionary has always been a part of governance. If you go back to conversations between, I think it was Louis Proudhon and Karl Marx. Proudhon was an anarchist, and they had some absolutely fascinating arguments. Now, the point is that because we've had communism, the revolutionary spirit of going against the oppressor has to be built into the system. Otherwise, people are going to go, this is totalitarianism. So you lead the protest. And that's what we've seen with these groups such as Extinction Rebellion and Black Lives Matter, the Soros-backed organizations. Now, we have hundreds of these, and they call themselves grassroots. And the narrative is controlled by very few people. And it doesn't matter, Richie, if we set up a public meeting and 100 people turn up. Out of that 100 people, there may be only two or three change agents there, but they're highly organized and they will take over the narrative.
Assume control, right?
Yes, right. Assume control.
Yeah.
And that is the audacity and what I've seen at a lot of events over the years. Now, we're straying slightly here from what you're actually talking about, but I think it's important because basically people have to realize that if you react against something, that's built in to this system. A reaction against it is built in.
This is Matrix stuff, this, isn't it? This is real Agent Smith-type Matrix stuff. And I don't say that to be glib. I mean it. I'm getting what you're saying here. We're dealing with levels of intelligence on the one hand that are exceptional. On the other hand, you know, somebody we know very well once said that the real forces behind this were never very good at creating anything. They're very good at destroying things, but not at creating things. But it's intelligent. I mean, intelligent enough to build in room for its own opposition.
And I think you brought up something really key. They're not creative.
No.
The artificial intelligence system is not creative. The structure of global governance is uncreative. It cannot create. Therefore, it is absolutely petrified of creativity and unpredictability. It freaks them out.
Yeah.
Absolutely freaks them out. Because if it can't be monitored and controlled, then it's outside the system. And then they've lost control. I want to give you a quote here from Demos. It's a public policy think tank, which actually really instructs our media and has ties directly to MI5. How do I know that? We debated them years ago at Goldsmith College, and they told us. Demos, listen to this, Richie. The new democracy will work with a combination of government open infiltration and citizens groups taking direct action. Now, that is chilling to me.
Yeah.
Because they're saying a new democracy. Well, wait a minute. Most people thought we lived in a democracy. Me and you, no, we don't, I would assume. But they're saying the new democracy will work with a combination of government, open infiltration, and citizens groups taking direct actions. The citizens groups are the ones talked about in the communitarian documentation.
You talked to me for ages the last time you were on about citizens' assemblies, and it was eye-opening in the extreme. You've actually given me a question really for you.
Yeah.
Why are they shifting the way it works, the way governance works? Why? I don't understand it. It seems to me that they were doing pretty well convincing us that we had a choice between Labour and the Tories, or between the Republicans and the Democrats, or Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. Things were going swimmingly for them. I don't want to be silly here, but I don't understand why. It seemed like they were doing quite well, thank you very much. So why this? Why this shift to, you know, to the local, as you've been explaining it? Why?
Well, it's about homogenization of the system. In other words, they don't want to keep having constant wars and friction. So what you do is you absorb everything into one system. So it looks as though there are voices of dissent. So you've got Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin. Yeah. To me, they're the same party.
Of course they are.
Because I understand the government system, right? And that is key to what's going on. So it doesn't matter whether it's Labour or Conservative. It's the same system. Keir Starmer is the same as Boris Johnson.
Of course he is.
Right?
And Tony
they
Blair.
They may have different personality traits and different training and different ways that they exhibit their assumed governance, which they don't have, but they are part of this system. That what they're saying is built into it. So the whole idea of globalization was that the world would become a global community. And the global village was actually a term which was brought about by Marshall McLuhan, who was a kind of into social engineering and media. And he said, the media is the message. The media is the message. So the whole idea of the global governance system is that you have a very simple template that you can use in every country. And they have a problem there when people don't want to go along with it. So, for instance...
Yeah, you've just answered the question really well. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but there's so much I want to get through. You've answered it brilliantly. That's exactly right. While I said things were going swimmingly, well, in fact, maybe they weren't. Maybe people over time have been seeing through the bullshit of the choice between left and right. And maybe this is the opt-out for those people. Oh, look, we have another... This is a much better system where you're in control locally. And I'm not simplifying what you're saying, but it's a brilliant answer. I can see now why it wasn't going swimmingly for them, maybe. Maybe they saw a big dip in the road in the near future. I want to ask you this. We're coming up for 22. We're going to go till about 5 to 7 today. Windowsontheworld.net. Follow Mark on Twitter as well. Do listen to him. I listen to him regularly. Brilliant guests he has on his programme. And it is really, really good forensic analysis of this. I don't do anything. I'm not an analyst. I never was, never will be. But this is next level analysis. And I'm not just kissing his arse. I don't do that. It's really, really important that you check him out and you share his videos and you share his shows with other people. Here's a question for you now I wanted to ask you. Imagine you're Ridley Scott now. Or your James Cameron. If they get what they want, fast forward to the year 2049 and Mark Windows Jr., your grandson, is 15, 16 years old, what would his daily life be like, do you think, if they get what they want? What sort of a human being will he be? What will he look like? What sort of things will he be doing? I'm putting you on the spot now. You can tell me to piss off if you want, but what would it look like? Because I know there will be listeners who they're only hearing this for the first time. And they'll be like, what is it they want to create? What will this technocratic society actually feel like on a day-by-day basis? Could you even begin to try and answer that?
There is no end to the control that they want over the individual within the new system. There is no end to it. So this is a very important question. Already, I know of people who are having their children snatched by the state for very little.
Yeah.
I know people already who are in big trouble through the systems that I've been talking about. Now, the children are going to be brainwashed from cradle to grave. That is the aim. And they will be controlled and monitored in real time. They will have no idea of what real personality is. They won't be allowed to develop real personalities because the artificial intelligence system will mentor them into a hive mind. Now, I don't think that it's going to get that far, and I'll tell you why. Because you have thousands of years of culture on this planet, and they're doing their best to wipe it out extremely quickly.
They are.
But they can't. They cannot do this. Every time they push a bit, there's a little bit of a pushback. For instance, if you go to some countries in Asia during lockdown, they were having riots. And those riots were about the right to have religious ceremonies.
That's right.
And events, right? Now, this is where there's going to be a huge conflict. And what this is really about is, what are people? What are we? What is our essence? Are we spiritual beings, or are we going to be artificial intelligence? That's the final frontier of the battle.
Yeah.
But that is something that is a philosophical and a spiritual warfare. So I think that what I'm already seeing is children are already being mentored into this very, very quickly. And young people have been for quite some time. The whole idea of sustainable development, the communitarian system, is to create this hive mind. And so they naturally demonize everything outside it. Of course, that means the death of all culture. They've already killed off the entertainment industry. And by the entertainment industry, I mean creativity. I mean music. I've got friends who are musicians. And the whole point of this is, I don't think that the indomitable human spirit, if there is such a thing, will tolerate it. I don't think it's possible, because if you look at these technocrats, and I've seen quite a few of them, they are devoid of the magic and the inspiration that many people still have. And to me, that's the battle. This is a battle that's being fought on a different level. It's so those children can be brought up by their parents in a different way. More and more people are going to opt out of the system, and I know many that have. Now, is it possible they can all be rounded up and have their children taken off? Yes, it's possible. But I don't think ultimately that is going to work. What I see is a system with different layers. Now, what they want to do is get rid of that. And to me, this takeover of infrastructure is all about that, because once they own pretty much all of your ideas, and we know about the whole idea of this is to relieve you of owning property. And I won't want to get into the philosophies of property. It's not private property that's the problem. It's the abuse of private property that's the problem. That covers left and right, socialism versus capitalism, whatever. It doesn't really matter. Are your thoughts your own? Do people want to have their own thoughts? Do they want to have creativity? Do they want to experience joy? Or do they want to become monotone? Do they want to become robotic? Do they want to become unthinking? And that is their choice. And to me, that's what this is about, Richie.
Yeah, you've brilliantly articulated that. You have. I was thinking about this question before you came on, and I thought to myself, if they get their own way, yeah, it would be as you described. You'd have people getting up in the morning. These would be people in 2050 that would have an Elon Musk type interface chip. They would be connected to the hive mind. Social crediting would be the norm. Autonomously driving vehicles. They would live in very small dwellings, wouldn't they? And everything would be smart. The fridge, the microwave, it would all be monitored. You would be allowed a certain amount of calories a day, all of that stuff. And it's not science fiction. That's the sort of thing, if they get their way. But that's a beautiful answer, that. Maybe there is an indomitable human spirit. Maybe there is I hate to use these buzzwords, their own buzzwords. Maybe there is a tipping point. Maybe something will happen and people will be aghast and say, no, not at all. Not. We're not having any more of it. I'd love to believe that. And I'm not saying I don't. I'm going to hold on to that thought. That the people will see it. I mean, talking about the confiscation of children, again, a very important point. You've been covering it for years. I have as well. I've had women on this program, great women, who've had their children taken away for dystopian things, like the possibility of future emotional harm. That, you know, you had a bad childhood yourself. You might do something to that child in the future. You've had mental health problems. All this stuff. You're right. We are seeing it at the moment. We are seeing people self-censoring at the moment and keeping their thoughts to themselves, and they're not expressing themselves. They're not being as artistic as they once were. We're seeing it happen, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to endure and that this agenda will win. So I'm thrilled to hear the bit of positivity there. Mark. I really am, you know. It's a heavy old burden, isn't it, to be carrying this stuff around? You're a very shrewd analyst and you spend a lot of time on it. It has to have some effect on you. I know you said you're down there by the sea. You're a musician. I know you love your music. I know you're a spiritual being anyway. Can't be easy walking around with this sort of knowledge, my friend.
In actual fact, Richie, when this started, I thought, oh, they're doing it. It started. And because I prepared myself mentally, it hasn't had a profoundly disturbing effect on me because I now know the way things are going. Now, the point is that I have a lot of people who listen, who phone me up, and they say, oh, this is really helping. It's really helping the way that people can analyze this or they can articulate something to put this over. So I think in a way, this is the time that maybe some people were born for, because I've never felt more kind of in the moment and alive than I do now, which may be confusing to some people. I see and I feel what's going on. I can see it everywhere. It's extremely disturbing. But the point is that I think now people have to really go into their inner strength and start really analysing what this is all about and what they're about and what they want. Because those people sitting in front of their TV screens and thinking that they're going to go back to their jobs and thinking that their house is going to be all right and that we're going to go back to some kind of new normal, well, they are going to suffer the most. The people who can adapt to this in real time and have no expectations have a chance of survival. And I think it's that serious, actually, Richie.
You know what comes out of you? I noticed this when I first met you. You don't have any hatred for the players. It's almost like you see it as a game of chess. The other side makes a move, and you and other analysts like you, there aren't too many of them in the UK, forensically pulling it apart. There are analysts around the world like yourself doing this work. It's almost like you see it as, right, you've done that, let's see where that's meant to go and can we anticipate that? I think it's very important not to hold hatred and anger inside you. You don't hate them, do you? That's very important, I think.
I think the bigger picture of this, Richie, is the key, because I've been up against the state, whatever you want to call it, corruption, for quite a while. I've had some really horrendous things happen in the past 5 years. And yes, I've been triggered by it. I've been very angry about what happened to other people, actually, not even myself. People have been stitched up, real criminal injustice. And I know what the system is capable of. However, when we're looking at this as a global action plan, we have to look at it dispassionately. And people say, well, if you don't get passionate about it, you won't do anything about it. No, it's not that. You have to look at what they were saying. These people, in my view, have put in a system which I don't think is going to be effective. It's taken them a long time to get it going. But they are in the belief that what they're doing is for the best. Of course, they're elitists. A lot of these people are extraordinarily privileged. And they have a very patronizing view of other people. And that is something that I do resent, because I don't like the idea that these technocrats sit there in Davos or wherever they are, having these conferences, and they assume they are intellectually superior
to you,
to other people on this planet. That's a problem, because I reckon I could argue with a lot of these people. And the other thing is that the anger thing and the reaction against it is, as I was saying, that's built in.
Built into it.
When you're angry, that's what they want. Same with the police. Of course, if they get needled with you, they'll wind you up so you get aggressive so they can arrest you. Or in some cases, they'll just say you got wound up and arrest you anyway. But the point is that it's really difficult, this. It's a really difficult thing, because I used to get triggered by it quite easily, really, because I started taking on these battles, and they do have an effect on you. They take a lot out of you. But I think that I talked to really good activists as well, people in the who've done this activism in the past, you know, and sort of done it all their lives. And they have a different view of it as well, because you get used to what the state is expecting you to do, or what this technocratic system is expecting you to do.
Well, why would you do what?
In a way, and I think you have to be strategic, because if you lose your head, you lose everything.
Listen, mate, come back again real soon. Don't leave it as long. Folks, for this sort of analysis on the global reset, the fourth industrial revolution, the players behind it, and where it is meant to go, but optimism as well, do check out windowsontheworld.net. Do go to youtube.com and subscribe to Mark there. He's on Twitter, of course, as well. Very, very worthwhile, I'm telling you. Check it out if you haven't before. I know there will be people listening now. They came on tonight to hear Mark as well. I'm well aware of that. Thanks for today, mate. It was brilliant to have you back on the programme. Sounding so optimistic, and plenty of hope rather than, you know, doom and gloom. We're all screwed. I was glad to hear that as well. You know, you're welcome back anytime, and I'll give you the very final word, 30 seconds, Mark Windows, and then we'll wrap it up.
Well, the globalists say the world must become more resilient, and they say that we are going to demand more security. If we demand more security, we are finished. So we don't want any more security. We want sovereignty. We want to be our own destiny. We want our own destiny, and we want basically to have some kind of autonomy. And if this goes through, we won't have that. But my hope is that people are going to come together, but without a particular group, without any agenda, and start basically forming groups to go forward and create something underneath this new system, or over the top of it, even better.
Great to have you on, Mark. Thanks so much, mate. Mark Windows, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Wednesday, the 23rd of September, 2020. Windowsontheworld.net, YouTube as well, and he's on Twitter. Do check him out. Great guy. Thanks to Mark for coming on today. 4 minutes, 30 seconds even to the top of the hour. Thanks for all the tweets that came in there. We got through pretty much most of your comments, in terms of you were sending me comments and questions even, and we were talking about those points anyway. Thanks for the questions, really appreciate that. Back with you tomorrow. Sarah Westall is on the programme tomorrow. I'm pretty sure I'll have another guest as well. That's Thursday's programme. There was something else I wanted to tell you, but it's gone right out of my head. I do have a pen and paper here. I could have written it down, but I didn't manage to write it down. But if it comes to me, I'll obviously say it. That's about it then. There was something I wanted to say. This does my brains in. It happens every other day. It must be the chemtrails. It must be the geoengineering. Yeah, what I wanted to say was, I've had a lot of emails recently. The show gets a hefty amount of emails. I've had a lot of emails with recommendations, people to get on the programme. Just to let you know, when I get those emails, I do generally reach out to the person you've recommended. It would be fairly unusual for me not to reach out to the person you've recommended, and in that case, there would be a very good reason. And so just be assured that when you send in a guest recommendation, I take it seriously, and I do reach out to people. Most of the time, I'm looking at getting people on the programme whom we haven't heard from before. And it is a pretty good ratio at the moment of new people we've not heard from against recurring guests. So what I'm saying is, keep them coming in, those recommendations. I do. It's great for me. Without a producer, without an editor, it is handy, because it's very quick for me to check out the person you've recommended and then to drop them an email or drop them a tweet, as it were. So there you go. Right, we'll close out tonight then. As there was a lot of optimism there from Mark Windows, windowsontheworld.net. Close out with Louis Armstrong. Thanks for being there today. See you tomorrow at 5, the usual time. As I said, Sarah Westall on the programme, one of the guests tomorrow. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. See you tomorrow. Bye now.